right, good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, February 11th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everybody. It is 10 degrees and snowing here in upstate New York. We are under a lake effect snow warning. It's kind of breezy. It's been coming down. I believe on Saturday they are now saying a high of 5, a low of -5. So we're finally getting down to the thick of winter. So where do we leave off yesterday? Talked about a bunch of things. Titled the show, Mosquito Vaccine Delivery, Cyclotides, and Malaria in Deer. People, I'm sure, had no idea what cyclotides were, so they didn't click on the show yesterday. But cyclotides were the substances that they were finding in different foods that were circular in nature. And I don't know if it actually said that the ones that naturally passed through digestion were circular, but researchers discovered that if they took certain proteins or aminos or whatever they were messing with, and instead of having them be linearly, which they are traditionally out of the box, and they made them circular, they were able to pass through digestion and absorb into the small intestine. And I actually just saw a story just as I was browsing this morning. And we read about this and dug into it quite a while ago about DNA and the genes from food that we ingest. Could they affect our genes? And I mean, we found all kinds of evidence that yes, it is true. Well, phys.org has now released a story. Could the food we eat affect our genes? We might look at that a little bit later as well. I am not. There were a couple Zika update stories. Now there are a pair of doctors, Argentinian and Brazilian, calling out a larvicide as being the potential cause for the microcephaly in babies down in South America. And one of the readers of the story, I have these all auto-posting now, so it's really good. It's posting to like 7 different sites all at the same time. This is one of Heather's stories, Heather Callaghan's stories. One of the readers of the story on UCY's page actually dug into this larvicide. And I definitely, I mean, I didn't see this until late yesterday, but it appeared to me that it was the BT corn, the same BT corn larvicide that was being used. So I guess we're going to have to see. You know, this is what I was trying to say the other day, just about putting me into a tailspin. There's so much going on right now. And I mean, you can read headlines all day. I could sit here and just scroll down all my Facebook pages and read you headlines, and that would probably easily fill an hour's show. But to talk intelligently about something and connect the dots, you really need to dig in and understand what they're trying to say and what their research has shown to then be able to talk intelligently and, like I said, connect dots to other things. So, honestly, I only read these headlines and kind of spot read what they were talking about. So, I'm not going to talk about this today. Maybe we'll talk about it tomorrow if I have time to dig into that larvicide. But even more interesting, and this is the one that, like, I could not even believe I was reading. There was another story that came out, again on a Natural Blaze. And at first, I didn't catch the title, but it was called Zika, What Went Wrong with the Mosquitoes. And I was like, oh, come on now. You know, that caused so much of a stir, saying, look, there's causal relationship. But remember, we had that one guy come out and say, yeah, with that piggybacking, could be very possible. But that good old, what was her name? Christy Wilcox did an addendum to her Discover story showing how the piggybacking was wrong with Christy Touche, because somebody else came out now, someone a lot smarter than me, some geneticist in Japan. I'm just going to read this. The most unfortunate aspect of this technology gone off the rails, which is mosquito bioengineering. And then we're going to get back to the stuff I want to do today. But I just want to give you a little taste of this because I was like, zing. Apparently, so this mosquito and bioengineering apparently resulted in the death gene blockage. And that was the one that if it didn't receive the tetracycline, remember, that the mosquitoes were supposed to die. But this almost sounds like this Japanese researcher is proving what I had suspected from the very beginning. Listen, listen, listen. All right. The most unfortunate aspect of technology has gone off the rails. Mosquito bioengineering apparently resulted in the death gene blockage using the GATA binding protein has affected the same gene in human embryos as is targeted in the mosquito pupa. Remember, when this first started happening, I was like, you know, what an unusual coincidence it is. And since we'd already discovered that mosquitoes biting can pass DNA and RNA into the bloodstream, potentially, from these other diseases. And potentially, we also discovered in some of the vaccine research we'd been doing with some of the new RNAi stuff, there was a researcher at Stanford, I believe, who had come out and said, yeah, you know, the stuff that they're putting into the vaccines, especially with some of this recombinant DNA and this RNAi stuff that they're putting in there, that she had evidence. She was a geneticist, and she was very against using aborted fetal cells. And so she had really gotten into genetics and trying to understand stem cells. And that was where she focused her research. And she discovered that the material that was in these vaccinations were actually absorbing into our own DNA. So I had postulated that while they were flipping these switches and snipping crap out of mosquitoes, and of course, the Oxitec's like, well, don't worry, most of the females will die. They're the only bitey ones. But I pointed out, I was like, you know, we read all about the Oxitec mosquitoes and the population suppression and the population elimination and how the experiment was all going to work. And the fact that the technology that they're using right now that they spliced into these mosquitoes with this death gene causes the larva or the pupae to die before maturity because they don't develop properly. And here, bang. Not long after all these mosquitoes were released, we start having all these women with these babies that are never going to properly mature into adults. It just is an odd same location, very similar-ish symptoms. You know, again, causation does not mean that that's, or whatever the term, whatever they said, something does not mean causation. It's early, guys, give me a break. And it's only 10 degrees here. My brain is rusty and cold. But anyway, so this geneticist, or whoever he is out of Japan, and I guess we'll find out, because see, this is what happens when I don't, this is why I didn't want to talk about it, but this just really caught my attention, so let's just finish reading this. If that truly is the scientific snafu, deliberate or accidental, then some heads at various levels need to roll, figuratively speaking. Who be made accountable for such horrendous technological horror impacting innocent babies in the future of humankind? According to an exquisitely researched paper written by Yoichi Shimatsu, here is apparently what went wrong, and here is the paragraph that is going to ding it all away. The OX513A captive mosquito program, and that was Oxitec's number for that mosquito, releases protein carrier male mosquitoes to mate with the local wild female mosquitoes. Right, we knew that. The lethal protein enters the eggs to disrupt the embryonic growth, causing the offspring to self-destruct before they reach adulthood. However, these same mother mosquitoes can then transfer the dangerous protein into women, and this is what we said in the very beginning, thereby seriously harming human embryonic development of the brain, nerves, heart, and testicles. And you know, when we were digging in yesterday, looking at some of those original stories that came out of some of the science magazines about the research that funding from Bill Melinda Gates Foundation was doing into mosquitoes and using them as flying vaccinators. And oh, all these things that they could do, they could splice and dice actual diseases into these mosquitoes. You know, they were talking about doing vaccines, but there was the one science article. They're like, well, yeah, we could do vaccines, or, you know, be careful what you ask for, because terrorists could get their hands on this and turn it into a bioweapon. You know, you got to wonder what's going on here, knowing about the fact that we have all of these different technologies that are looking at controlling reproduction, right? We have that Wolbachia bacteria we discussed yesterday too, and that's in the mosquitoes they're releasing in Australia that literally affects the sex organs and desexes the males, turns them into females, makes the females able to reproduce without male assistance, makes some strains of the mosquito that have one form of the bacteria unable to reproduce with other mosquitoes that have another form of bacteria because it causes cytoplasmic incompatibility. I mean, they're doing some pretty sick, crazy stuff. And it's one big fat experiment, people. This is not known. There are unknowns everywhere. So anyone who tells you, like, you know, when they first proclaimed Zika was being caused by XYZ, and then everybody had ideas Zika could be caused by this, that, or the other thing. In the very beginning, when we looked at this, all I know is that this genetic modification is way worse than anything that we have ever had, any poison, any bad in our environment, because this is the code of life. I mean, we are playing gods. It is so beyond. So anyway, when I read this, so it's going to affect, I'm trying to find where I was, brain, nerves, heart, and testicles. All right. So anything that allows you to think, to move, to live, or to reproduce is now damaged in utero. It says damage to the GATA1 protein in the human embryo is also associated with Down syndrome and a brain disorder similar to the Brazilian microencephaly. While there are many other causes of microencephaly, this new Brazil type is extraordinarily severe. And poof, right out of the blue, it just appears, and it's extraordinarily severe. It says, before I end this, I will entice you into reading Sumiatsu's entire article, but here's something that should get your attention. The first major outbreak of Zika occurred in April and May of 2007 on Yap Island. And yeah, I dug way deep into this, which is a part of the Federated States of Micronesia in the South Pacific. And of the island's 7,400 residents, antibodies against Zika were found in 74% of the population. No deaths were contributed to Zika. No patients were hospitalized. They did have some cases of Guillain-Barré syndrome. In the following year, local health workers reported an increased case of microencephaly in newborns, a claim disputed in other reports. And yeah, originally when I dug into old reports on that, I did not see that there were any cases of microencephaly, only Guillain-Barré syndrome. The Yap outbreak was an extraordinary phenomenon for several reasons. Over the past 60 years, its discovery by Rockefeller Institute in a monkey in Uganda, and there have been only 14 cases reported. The dis and we read 17, I think, yesterday. The distance from the coast of East Africa to Yap is 11,000 kilometers, and not a single resident of Yap has ever visited Africa. A few Filipinos, presumably medical workers, contracted Zika, but none of them were ever reported in Yap. Yap is an isolated island community made, and it made an ideal laboratory for an illegal, and you know what? I dug some of this up, and this was, again, 75 tabs, you know, and between the browser crashes and just zero time, it's just so hard to keep up on this. But check this out. I started digging into where we had secret biowarfare program laboratories on islands, because that's what we did. That's what we did for the nuclear program, Bikini Atoll, kaboom. Well, listen, Yap Island is an isolated community, making it an ideal laboratory for an illegal human experiment and clinical study. The nearest major island is Guam. Oh, isn't that where we have a lot of our military? Yes. The former headquarters of the U.S. Naval Research Lab, which has since relocated to Indonesia. Yeah, I trust Indonesian governments. Where it supplied lab assistants with the notorious super flu researcher Yoshihiro Kawaka at the University of Wisconsin. The local healthcare system is primarily funded with U.S. foreign aid, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation donated more than $300,000 toward the Oxitec mosquito release program in the Cayman Islands and in Brazil. Bing, bing, bing. So interesting, interesting. I don't know. I scroll down to the bottom, and I see as a reference... But I think it's just connecting. Oh, I don't know. Well, we'll see. This talks about all the RNA fragments. And, you know, I'm telling you, we already saw this technology with vaccines. So give me more time. Give me more time, because I'm going to dig more into that. I don't know if it'll be tomorrow or maybe Monday we'll talk about it. But there's definitely more going on. So all I got to say is zing to all you World Health Organization people who seem to think you knew everything that was going on. Now, of course, on the tails of all that, Obama has now requested $1.8 billion, and we talked about that yesterday too, to help the CDC get their, what do they call it, some sort of command and control. And I did a story about that. During Ebola, the CDC created some new elite strike team to go out and deal with Ebola cases. Well, now we've staffed it with 300 employees from the CDC in this Operation Command and Control Center to be able to dispatch them at any moment's notice if we have some emergency Zika cases in the United States. Literally, we literally read that yesterday. $1.8 billion to fight Zika, and the CDC moves to the highest alert level. Be afraid, be very afraid. So we're going to give some of that money, of course, to pharmaceutical companies to sweeten the deal for them to get us a vaccine. We're going to give some to South America, too. Let's let their mad scientists do some more stuff. I mean, this is just, we just have billions of dollars to just chuck around everywhere. So I see now yesterday, Obama makes risky bid to increase science spending. And this isn't Scientific American. It says, research advocates worry that the president's budget proposal could fire in the face of political opposition. Well, what is it, political opposition? I mean, we've been watching this merging of medicine and technology for the last few years on this show, and it's very frightening. And Obama has been the one who is implementing all these programs with executive order as he's backdooring all these deals. You know, we had the Brain Project, he got all behind, because that's going to be the new 21st century economy, like the Genome Project was. Precision medicine, which is kind of the overarching, where the Brain Project falls underneath this precision medicine is using all this DNA, RNAi, genomics, cures, personalized medicine. Give up your DNA swab and put it into the central database, and we'll run it through our AI computer, bloop, name Watson, and we'll give you a diagnosis and feed you your edible vaccine and your cricket protein because it's good for the climate change. You know, I mean, that's kind of where we've ended up in this last 4 years. The first 4 years were just trying to figure out how to bomb the crap out of everything. But the second 4 years, you know, and it all started with that Obamacare crap. That has been forcing a lot of what is happening now. People losing their ability to choose, and a lot of healthcare providers now providing, quote unquote, government subsidized medicine. And then Obama, after Sandy Hook, he's like, oh, now we want doctors to screen for depression. You know, this all is connected around the healthcare industry and technology. So, all right, he requests $1.9 billion for the newest fake epidemic. Oh my God. So we're going to suck out more money and feed it to the universities that are doing this research, to the corporations that are getting ready to roll out IPOs and make bazillions of dollars. Because you know what? It gets all the corporations on the Fed's team. That's what the point of it is. So what do I see yesterday? Obama is now inking an executive order for 19 billion dollars. Yeah, that's again with a B, billion, but not 1.8 billion like he is for Zika. 19 billion for cybersecurity. Now, back a few years ago, right around the time of the Ebola thing, because I know I was doing stories on all of that, we had all the tech CEOs show up at the White House. And one of the things that happened, of course, they were talking about having to give up information to the surveillance state. And they, of course, wanted to cover their asses to make sure that there weren't any privacy lawsuits or anything that could be brought against them. And the feds are like, don't worry about it. You know, we're going to pass all these laws that'll protect you guys. You guys just work with us. We're going to take care of everything. But remember, shortly thereafter, we had cyber attack after cyber attack after cyber attack after cyber attack. Oh my God, there's hackers everywhere. All of our insurance companies, health insurance companies, banks, Sony. Remember Sony? Oh my God, over that North Korea movie. Yes, the North Koreans were so mad. The Chinese, the Russians, oh, ISIS. There were just cyber attacks. The Office of Personnel Management. Oh, we're just so insecure. And you know what, corporate America? Now you have cyber attacks. We had, you know, I don't even remember. Lots of retail outlets got hit. Banks, like I said. Some federal agencies got hit. There was all kinds of stuff that happened. So Obama used that to craft a plan to bring now all of these technology companies who had once been separate entities under the government umbrella in the name of cybersecurity. So, hey, technocracy, it's here now. And now we have $19 billion that we're going to use to enable the, quote, cybersecurity national action plan. I don't know if I want to read this. I have the press release from the White House here, and it looks really long. So let's read the short one out of Forbes. Obama wants 19, not million, billion dollars to fix the federal government's cybersecurity failures. It's no secret the U.S. government's been battered by embarrassing digital attacks and the breach of the Office of Personnel Management, which exposed the details of at least 21.5 million government employees. And by the way, I'm going to tell you what, that Office of Personnel Management apparently isn't just for government employees, because I had a friend of mine get a letter in the mail that says, hey, guess what? You were part of a breach from the Office of Personnel Management. They're like, what? Why the hell would I have anything to do with the Office of Personnel Management? Well, apparently, some employers do federal background checks on people. And guess where they go through? The Office of Personnel Management. So if there was ever a federal background check done on you, you may have been hacked as well. And I'll tell you, I've gotten letters from my medical insurance provider, from my bank, and now from my mortgage company just the other day. All of them telling me all of my records have been potentially stolen through cyber attacks. Anyway, repeated claims of Russian and Chinese hacking of American businesses and public agencies continued to pour in last year. Isn't it amazing? And now this year, look, we're already in February. How many cyber attacks have you heard of? I know I haven't heard of any, but it seemed for a while there was like every other day was the biggest hack ever. Biggest ever. But we haven't invested anything. Like, how did everything just like get so quiet in lockdown? Because it was another big boogeyman that came out from under your bed, remember? That's how Obama does it. The mosquitoes now are hiding under the bed and in the closet. But last year was the hackers and ISIS and the self-radicalized teenagers on the internet. Anyway, repeated claims of Russian and Chinese hacking of American businesses and public agencies continued to pour in last year. And just this week, reports indicated 20,000 FBI staffers had their data leaked following an attack. Oh, yeah, actually, I did catch that yesterday afternoon. Apparently now they published addresses to FBI employees. I don't know about that, but maybe. President Obama wants to fix this with an ambitious cybersecurity national action plan that's winning plaudits. The president asked for a 35% increase on spending on cybersecurity for the 2017 budget to reach $19 billion. $19 billion we don't have, whilst signing an executive order creating a permanent Federal Privacy Council and establishing a commission on enhancing national cybersecurity. As part of the increased spending, $3.1 billion of information technology modernization funding will seek to replace unsecure legacy technology. The government will invest $62 million in cybersecurity personnel, as the federal government will get its first Chief Information Security Officer, and that's your CSO. They just, back 2 years ago, added a CTO, which would be the head of the technology, who will lead the charge to secure the government. And one of the things that we discovered in digging into the feds and the technology companies is that they had asked Microsoft, they had Microsoft and Google and Cisco and who was the other one I remember seeing there? Zuckerberg. All the big boys were at the White House. They asked Microsoft to give them a hand to help fix Obamacare. We found out there's a revolving door between Google employees and the federal government with some of their technology positions. So don't think at all that this does not have something to do with merging all of those. I mean, it's all about being able to see what's going on 24/7 on every device, on every machine. You know, Microsoft is forcing, as of July, Windows 10 upgrades for everyone. They're going to force it. They're going to download it to your machine as part of an update. And if you don't install it by then they're going to charge you. Next time you want to install it, you're not going to get any updates. And they are dropping support. I read originally Windows 7 was supposed to be supported through 2020 and Windows 8 through 2023. Well, hey, guess what? Microsoft decided, nope, we're not going to support them anymore. As of July, you're going to need Windows 10. And remember we read about Windows 10 having this big open back door where they could suck out so much information and geolocate everything. Gives them the ability in the end user agreement to delete things from your machine and scan everything for copyright. I mean, this is in preparation for this whole global consuming of our liberties that they're working on. They want access to everything. They're going to give it to all of the international law agencies. And remember who created Cyber Patrol Center, where they're working together with all of law enforcement across the entire world. Who was that? To make sure the granny didn't have her savings stolen? Oh, yes, Microsoft. All right, anyway, so we're going to get a CSO. The Department of Homeland Security is increasing the number of federal civilian cyber defense teams. Federal civilian. Did you hear that? Federal civilian cyber defense teams to 48. And they will be tasked with finding vulnerabilities and possible intruders sitting on government systems. The Commission on Enhancing Cybersecurity. You know what I don't get? Like, why don't they get themselves a contractor to install some vulnerability software that runs 24/7 and you pay software as a service monthly fee to have someone monitor intrusions? And you got good old DARPA Dan who's already working on autonomous intrusion detection software. We looked at that a long time ago. So what's the problem? Where do you need $19 billion? I'm sure I could come up with a solution for you, Mr. Obama, for much less than $19 billion. You know, I don't know, buy some new freaking computers, get rid of all the old shit, and get yourself some good intrusion detection. Ding, ding. Not difficult. You know, why don't you guys work on your vetting process a little better? You know, most breaches come from someone on the inside. And yeah, there's hack attacks, but, you know, there's ways around that. Not $19 billion worth. Remember, federal contractors, anyway, always jack prices up. It's just ridiculous. The Commission on Enhancing National Cybersecurity will report to Obama later this year with recommendations for federal departments and private sector to improve protections over the next decade. The Privacy Council, meanwhile, will hope to write up more strategic and comprehensive federal privacy guidelines. Today's announcements were not all about fixing a poorly protected private public sector, but also about boosting citizens' own security. The government wants to push consumers, ding, 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 to secure their online accounts by two-factor authentication. The National Cybersecurity Alliance is set to partner with Google, Facebook, Dropbox, and Microsoft to make it simpler for users to add login security. So, put on a seatbelt. This is just the next piece. I just couldn't believe $19 billion. So here we go. And then actually, this is before this. I've had this queued up for about a week, so we're going to finally get to it. I'm going to stick on the technology stuff today. Head of Google Search retires. And I'm going to tell you, I mentioned a long time ago I was having trouble over the last few months with Chrome and my search engine where it goes to this blank. You know, I type something into the URL field and hit enter, and it goes to this about blank. And in the beginning, I thought, oh no, do I have the about blank virus? But no. I was reading about how certain users were put on this other search engine for Google, and it was kind of random how they picked it. I'm sure it was random. But some people were using the old Google search engine algorithm, and other people were now on the AI search engine algorithm. And I have a feeling that I was on the AI algorithm because I started having like search results now. All of a sudden, I mentioned yesterday, you got to go to page 29 to find anything that I've discussed and I want to give you a reference to. It's like way, way back in the searches. And remember, they were talking about implementing that truth algorithm. Well, there was just a new algorithm implemented that was very secretive, according to the story I was reading back like a month or two ago. It makes you wonder what they're doing with this new artificial intelligence algorithm. But listen to this. Head of Google search is retiring, and the artificial intelligence chief is taking over. With Amit Sanghal leaving, Google is reportedly now merging their AI and their search divisions. Ding, 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 ding. And if we know some of the stuff that Kurzweil's been working on, which is being able to scrape unformatted text and information and make it so they can discover what the meaning of something is just by the context, you will know that this is a pretty big deal. Amit Sanghal, Google's senior vice president for search, is leaving the company after 15 years. Sanghal, I think it's Sanghal, has long been in charge of Google's flagship product, and he famously rewrote Google's page ranking algorithm in 2001. He was also the big driver of Google's Star Trek ambitions, which, I don't know, that's their communicator prototype. With Sanghal leaving, John Gyanendra, Google's head of artificial intelligence, is taking over the search division. Recode is reporting that with the change, Google will now merge search and artificial intelligence divisions. Gyanendra previously led the effort to introduce the Knowledge Graph, which is a learning machine that gives you direct answers rather than a list of links to search. Right. I mean, hey, who needs a link to be able to do their own research? Let Google just tell you what the truth is, and then you won't even have to click. Your fingers will get a rest, and Google will just tell you what the truth is. Don't worry about it. Today, the Knowledge Graph powers answers to the OK Google voice queries that appear on just about every consumer-facing Google OS. Moving the artificial intelligence unit in with the search is certainly an eyebrow-raising move. Machine learning seems to be taking over all of Google lately. Ding, ding, ding. And Google's DeepMind, and that's Kurzweil's project, is building a general artificial intelligence that is smart enough to learn and beat various games. It recently open sourced TensorFlow, which is a software library for machine intelligence and machine learning technology in Google Inbox that can even write short replies out of your Gmail emails for you. Now, we're going to have artificial intelligence writing us emails automatically. Think about this. This is beyond insanity. After building up Google's biggest product, which, yeah, like the search, what's so huge about this is the head of the search engine, the 15-year head of the search engine, the guy from the very beginning, is retiring. The search engine's what made Google. After building up Google's biggest product, Sanghal says, I am eager to see what kind of an impact I can make. What? Oh, philanthropically, of course. And to spend more time with my family. All right, and moving along, and there's a lot of these stories, but I'm going to hit a couple of these fast. Google's self-driving car just took a step forward. Google's self-driving car AI can be the vehicle's legal driver, says the U.S. government. Yes, we now have AI can be declared the legal driver of the car. So now the regulatory doors are open for allowing And this has been my fear all along. I talked about this last. Bastion of Freedom is driving with the windows open and the music cranking for a couple hours in the country. Regulatory doors are now open, allowing for the removal of the steering wheel, the pedals, and other controlling pieces of hardware. The U.S. government has cleared the way for Google to create a self-driving car that doesn't also have a human driver inside the vehicle that can take over if necessary. In this setup, the autonomous driving software itself would be the vehicle's legal driver. None of the human passengers would be required to have a driver's license. In November last year, Google submitted a proposed design to the U.S. National Highway Traffic Safety Administration for a self-driving car that has, quote, no need for a human driver, unquote. And on February 4th, reported by Reuters, the National Safety Administration said, we will interpret, quote unquote, driver in the context of Google's described motor vehicle design as referred to as the self-driving system and not to any of the vehicle's occupants. We agree with Google that its self-driving car will not have a driver in the traditional sense that vehicles have had drivers during the last more than 100 years. Currently, while Google's self-driving car prototypes can operate fully autonomously, they are required to have a human driver inside. They must also have the various accoutrements, a steering wheel and pedals, that would allow the driver to take over if required. This sounds sensible at first blush, but the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration letter said that Google expressed concern that, quote, providing human occupants of the vehicle with mechanisms to control things like steering, acceleration, and braking could be detrimental to safety because the human occupants could attempt to override the self-driving system's decisions, unquote. Now that just gave me chills because if you remember back a few months ago, we read a story about the self-driving car and the algorithm and whether or not that self-driving car would make a decision to kill you or to kill the 30 people that it might run into if it turns the wheels to prevent you from hitting an object and goes into a crowd. And the algorithm in the self-driving car is designed to kill you because that would be the lowest loss of life. Now remember, I discussed this and we looked at the ethics of this. I am not about running into a crowd of 30 people with a car. But on the other hand, there's something called self-preservation, and any living creature that is faced with, like, in few multiple seconds being splatted is going to take some measure to try to prevent that and not think of the ethics of it at the moment. You're just going to be turning the wheel or trying to turn out of the way. You're going to do something to not slam into that wall. And like I said, if I turn and went off onto a sidewalk and there's 30 pedestrians, those pedestrians should have situational awareness enough to get their asses out of the way if a car was coming. But Google apparently has concerns that if there's a steering wheel or a brake pedal, you might try and stop that self-driving car from slamming you into the wall and saving those 30 people on the sidewalk. What insanity is this? You know, I told you too. Back like in September, October, my kid comes home and says that they were working on taking a test or something online. And at the very end of the test, they were quizzing the kids as to whether or not they would be interested in driving in a Google self-driving car. Why or why not? And they gave them like a free-form paragraph. And my daughter put in there that she wouldn't want to drive in the Google self-driving car because it might take her to the police station. And I mean, that's the thing. And of course, she was listening to me at dinner. But I mean, that's the thing. Think about it. with all these new remote biosensors, they could test anything. You know, all this stuff is coming. They've already been able to do with lasers in an airport from like hundreds of feet away, be able to tell what you had for breakfast by scanning your lips or your fingertips. How long is it going to be when you open the doorknob to the Google self-driving car? They're going to go, oh, we found nicotine on your fingers. And there's, I don't know, we see an Egg McMuffin that we discovered on your fingertip and some THC. And you get in, the doors lock. Time to go see the doctor, Johnny. I don't know. And this is just frightening. I'm not getting into a car that has no human driver and is being driven by some autonomous AI that is controlled by Google, quote unquote, we are not evil. Give me a break. And this is just, I can't even, and this is all happening at the very same time. Don't think that that's a coincidence. So now, however, it seems like the U.S. government will allow the self-driving software to be the official driver of the vehicle. I mean, this is as big as giving corporations the ability to be a legal entity. They have now given AI the ability to be a driver in a car, which in turn opens the door to rewriting regulations to allow for closed-circuit autonomous driving systems without steering wheels, pedals, or other human-operated mechanisms. For example, right now, the U.S. regulations stipulate that a car's dashboard must provide an indicator for low tire pressure, but in the future, that warning would be fed directly into the autonomous driving software. One day, guys, you know, this is all being done under the guise of climate change, I'll tell you that. And I haven't seen that yet, but it will be because you won't need to own your own vehicle. And hey, you know what? There's not enough jobs for you to be able to even afford one anymore, so don't worry about it. But Google self-driving cars are out there, zoop, zoop, zoop. And you know what? We'll make them all really economical. They look like a little VW bug. Probably run on... I don't know, cow dung or something. No, I don't know. Maybe they're electric. I have no idea. But they're going to make them green. They're going to be green vehicles. And you pesky car fixing American, you know, we don't want you fixing cars anymore anyway because we're going to use the DMCA on you if you try tinkering with things like what happened with the tinkering with the exhaust computer, like, wasn't it Volkswagen? Didn't they just get bitch slapped? I think they did. But, you know, you're going to be able to push a button on your cell phone or whatever, your wearable in the future that says car. That's all. Car. Beep. I need to go to the store. And car. Car will show up and it'll take 20 qubits or so out of your digital currency, your digital, I don't remember what the transhumanists were calling it, where they just give you a monthly allotment of salary just for being alive because, you know, nobody will be working anymore. And they'll take your 20 qubits so you can go to the store and buy things or go to the doctor, you know, because bloop, you have your little Fitbit bracelet on that's taking all your monitored readings. And it is now time for your doctor appointment. I mean, I totally see where this is going. It says, now, however, while this is certainly a big step toward truly driverless cars, there's still a long way to go, so don't worry about it. The next question is whether or not and whether or how Google could certify that the self-driving system meets a standard developed and designed to apply to a vehicle with a human driver. I think they're just going to skip that. Things are moving quickly in the UK as well. London's transport bosses said that they are right now in active discussions with Google with the hopes of getting the company to trial its self-driving cars on the other side of the pond. Self-driving cars are currently being tested on the roads in UK, but just like the US, they still require a human driver inside who can take over if necessary. Let's continue on Google because they're doing a lot of bad stuff. Remember we talked about Google Loon And that was that secretive-ish program where they were talking about putting cell towers into higher stratospheres to be able to provide internet to third world nations. And at the 11th hour, all of a sudden, they put in an FCC application to do Google Loon over the United States. And a lot of it was redacted. But one of the things that was going on at the same time was that the FAA was putting regulations into place for all these commercialized drones they're getting ready to release this year from places such as Amazon and Google and Walmart and lots of other groups, where we discovered air traffic control is going to be done by NASA, Verizon, and 13 other unnamed or partially unnamed technical corporations. So, big correlation there. Last I saw, and it was just after the beginning of the year, Google Loon still is not launched over the United States, but it was supposed to be launching right at the beginning of 2016. Well, look at this. This is a different project that I just saw something on, and I don't quite remember this one. This is from February 1st. Report details Google's Project Skybender, a 5G internet drone program. Plane-like drones could someday beam 1 gigabit per second to 10 gigabits per second internet down to Earth. If a report from The Guardian is to be believed, Google has yet another internet in the sky program in the works. It is called Project Skybender, and it aims to outfit drones with millimeter wave transceivers. Millimeter wave. Radios that work in a slice of the spectrum that could be used in the next generation 5G networks. You know, millimeter wave technology, didn't we read about that in surveillance? You know what? I got to make some notes of that. We should dig into millimeter wave as well. You out there, SLC, do a couple searches. Let's see what they're using millimeter wave for right now. Because, I mean, this is the first time I've read about Skybender. It's mind-bending. Apparently, Google currently has drones whizzing around the airspace of Spaceport America in New Mexico. Yeah, I thought so. Isn't that the NASA where Virgin? And it is where the project shares a hangar with Virgin Galactic. Currently, the drone hardware seems to be an optionally piloted commercial aircraft called the Centaur, along with solar-powered drones from Google Titan. Both aircraft are quote-unquote plane-like drones with wings and front-facing propellers. The report says that Google is using the drones to, quote, experiment with millimeter wave radio transmissions, and that the project, quote, ultimately envisages thousands of high-altitude self-flying aircraft delivering internet access around the world. The FCC has said that the 5G millimeter wave networks could hit speeds between 1 and 10 gigabits per second. And currently, engineers are working around natural distance and signal propagation issues inherent in higher frequency. While millimeter wave transceivers might eventually be integrated into smartphones, Google is presently using several stationary antennas around Spaceport America. The company already has Project Loon. Yeah, there we go. A, quote, ding, cell tower in the sky program that uses high-altitude balloons to beam 4G LTE down to users. So wait a minute. Oh, here, last week we wrote about the Google's FCC filings for the mysterious national airborne network, but it still seems to be Project Loon, not Project Skybender. That's what I was thinking. Like, are these part of the same project? But I guess they're not. And this is out of Ars Technica, by the way. The filing that surfaced last week, which it didn't, I mean, we saw the filing back a month or so ago, asked for 2 years of testing in the 71 to 76 gigahertz and 81 to 86 gigahertz bands, while the Guardian says that Google has permission from the SEC to test this project at 28 gigahertz until July. Google first started flying the Titan drones in New Mexico in 2014, but back then they were just testing the 900 megahertz spectrum, and that is what your old cordless phones used to use. All right, guys, and where are we going to end this one up? Good old Microsoft. Good old Microsoft is testing underwater data centers on the ocean floor. The future of the internet could be below the waves. Yes, yes. Massive data centers that bring you your daily internet comprise countless racks of servers that generate massive amounts of heat. Companies like Google and Facebook are always on the lookout for the best and most cost-effective cooling solutions, as well as the NSA, to keep these computer arrays from getting too hot. And Microsoft may have just discovered one of the most inspired solutions yet. Project Natick, N-A-T-I-C-K, is an experimental trial to see how data centers perform when they are underwater. It might sound like something out of a Jules Verne novel, but Microsoft is totally serious about the idea, having looked into its feasibility of its subsea servers since 2013. According to Microsoft, with some 50% of the world's population living within 200 kilometers of the sea, underwater data centers can be readily deployed in coastal environments, making more sense than land-based facilities located much further away. So there we go. Underseas data centers, right where you'll never be able to get to them. All right, guys, well, make sure you stick around. We're in the last 15 seconds of the show, if you can even believe it. It is Thursday, so Mr. Kevin Blanche is live up next. And then tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern, we have Ron live with Game On at 8. Behind the Woodshed this week's with Hal Anthony, 10. Double Cross live with Chuck. And at 11 p.m. Eastern, Mr. S. M. Gibson with Anti-Media Radio. All right, guys, make sure you stick around for more radio and have an awesome Thursday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.